We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky. Broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky, or at least theoretically, that's what it would be. Damon, though, under the weather. We started to see it coming on yesterday. There was some throat clearing, some humming, and Damon coughing too much to speak into the microphone today, so he is at home resting up. In his stead, we have Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky, the People's Champion, is here. Alongside myself, Matt Kolsky and Ray Ratto, across from me, resplendent in Lincoln Avenue Brewery polo.
Free.
Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Joe, welcome.
What's up?
Well, I think you know what's up. The San Francisco 49ers are no longer an undefeated football team, and I'm glad you're here today, Joe, because as the voice of the fan, here's what I texted this to Albie, and then I kept it under wraps, and Albie didn't even know what I meant because my text was sort of gibberish. But here's what I want to know about today, from you first off, but from the people, and even maybe from Ray.
I see no reason to involve me, by the way.
We could have that conversation, but it's really one for the higher-ups, because I'm not sure I disagree with you, but here you are.
And, Ray, I value your opinion. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, we're going to put a stop to that, too.
Well, hopefully we can put a stop to you blocking me on Twitter. We'll get to that later.
Oh,
maybe
no.
The third or fourth hour.
I don't even remember that.
I know. So we can unremember it and unblock me, and then we'll go from there.
I didn't realize this was a thing. But we can, let's save that for the 3 o'clock hour.
Let's
right
save
now,
it for the 6 o'clock hour.
You're right.
6:02
is a good time for that discussion. But and by the way, it's 6:02. Ray's been gone for 5 minutes. So
nice.
That's not a parking lot conversation.
I like that.
If you want to talk to Ray at 6:02, it better be on the phone. I want to know this. To me, there are two ways of viewing last night's game. I don't think it's reasonable with an 8-1 football team to get frantic, to panic, to freak out. Okay? But you can look at last night in two ways. To make it as short as I can, one way is first time they've faced a really good football team and they lose, blew a kick, bad Jimmy performance, none of the receivers besides Emmanuel Sanders are worth a dime. Uh-oh, this could be trouble. Or, look, superstar tight ends out. Number one wide receiver goes down in the first half. Offensive line is rusty after your two tackles have missed 4 to 6 weeks. And even with all that, forced overtime and could have won if a rookie just showed up on Tuesday kicker could have made a 46-47 yarder. Not so bad. Feel pretty good about it. So the question I ask to you, Joe Shasky, is as one of the more, how do I put this, volatile fans I interact with, is there any panic? Is there any real concern here? Or are you taking the positive angle still?
Last night was a legendary game, and I don't say that lightly. I mean that sincerely. Last night was one of those games that I know 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're going to all remember. Like, remember that Monday nighter against Seattle when Russ the Magician just made play after play after play after they finally intercepted him in the red zone with a chance to win the game? And I'm going to also remember this because this is one of those games that the 49ers just totally kicked themselves every single chance. I mean, they let this one slip through their hands, and it's super depressing. Not so much about the record, right? Because they're 8-1. I mean, obviously the perspective is they're probably going to go to the playoffs. But damn it, can you just beat Pete Carroll? Can you beat Russell Wilson one time? Can you beat him at home? I mean, like, the biggest game in Levi's history. And again, once again, Pete Carroll gets the best of you. Once again, Russell Wilson gets the best of you. And there's a lot of stuff to dissect as far as like the offense, the line.
Thing you didn't say, Jadeveon Clowney gets the best of you.
Jadeveon Clowney was unbelievable last night. I thought he was the best player on the field. I thought he was absolutely destroying Staley and McGlinchey. But it's one game. It's not the end of the world. I'm not here to say that Staley's completely finished. We will see as time goes on. McGlinchey, obviously still a very, very young player. Yeah. It was an awesome draft pick last year. But I want to ask Ray, what did you think about Jimmy Garoppolo specifically? Because there's some games that I go back in my own memory and I go, there were certain nights when I would watch Steve Young and I would say, he's just a little off. He doesn't have it. And I'm not that he wasn't brilliant at all last night, because Jimmy wasn't, but he left a lot to be desired, and I was frustrated with the decision-making and the ball placement last night. Did you get the same kind of feeling from Jimmy Garoppolo that I had?
I've always thought that Jimmy Garoppolo is like every other quarterback, capable of a game where he can't save you. I mean, there are very few quarterbacks in the history of the game who, when you go, we're in trouble, what are you going to do about it?
Could Steve Young do that?
Steve Young could be erratic, too.
I agree.
But, you know, I think on this team, Jimmy Garoppolo is rarely going to be required to save them from themselves. And I think the fact that now they are again out of receivers has something to do with that, because I think he did try to force things. And when he tries to force things, he gets in trouble. Like Matthew Stafford, only with not quite the arm. I was not offended by him. I was not inspired by him. He was who he is destined to be at this stage of his development.
Overall, what does that loss say to you about the Niners?
Remarkably little. For one, Seattle has been a team on the come for a while. The one thing that jumped out at me was that this is the first time I thought the offensive line got bullied.
Big time.
And it was not just Jadeveon Clowney who did that.
Yeah.
A lot of guys on the Seattle side were winning their battles pretty consistently.
Reed was effective,
and,
for sure.
And while I think you can throw one out and that Arizona is not going to, you know, Chandler Jones is not Jadeveon Clowney, after that, the task will become harder. Maybe it was just that Staley and McGlinchey had some rust to clean off.
What's the voodoo, Ray?
There is no voodoo.
No, why does Seattle have this on us?
Because Seattle has been better than the 49ers for most of the decade. It's not, I mean.
You're right.
It's not complicated.
How much of that is just the quarterback, though?
It's not just that. Pete Carroll, too.
Fair enough, but other than, even if I give you Pete Carroll, although I think I'd still take Kyle Shanahan, what else do they have? What's the other edge for Seattle here? I mean, the edge is the quarterback.
The edge now is the quarterback. Back then, when the hammering started to happen,
the Legion of Boom. Sure. But I'm saying today.
But it changes. All teams develop. I mean, the 49ers 7 years ago, you know, were a team that could do some dynamic things on offense, but Seattle could take them away. Last night, the 49ers could not run the ball with the kind of efficiency that they had, which forced them to become a passing team, which I think is the weakest part of their entire game.
And I think that's one of the things we have to dig in on today is, and at the risk of doing a trite radio or post-game reaction thing.
That's what I do.
Is that sort of a blueprint, right? I mean, it has become a trite thing to say, but I think it's a fair question to ask in this case when, I mean, particularly, and I don't know if we've found out anything yet, Albie. We're rolling on Kyle Shanahan back there. Is that what I'm to understand? And so we'll get the latest on the injury situations. But if it's bad news, and you're likely to be without Kittle and Sanders at least for a little while moving forward, I wonder, did Seattle just show you that the way you beat the San Francisco 49ers is put pretty much your entire defense in the box and say, Kendrick Bourne, Dante Pettis, Deebo Samuel, let's see what you got.
Well, you can do anything you want schematically, but you have to have the players to carry that out. And I think Seattle showed last night that it is not the inept defense that it has shown to date, because the 49ers are the kind of team that bullies teams, and Seattle wasn't having it. So I think it's got to be not only scheme, but it's got to be talent. And you won't see that this week against Arizona because Arizona gives up points to everybody. But you'll see it against New Orleans, and you'll see it against Baltimore, and you'll see it the second time against Seattle. I mean, scheme is part of it, but if you can't carry out the scheme, it doesn't matter what you do or how many guys you put in the box, because if you don't have good enough players, that scheme's going to collapse.
Well, they just need some players to step up and make plays. I mean, straight up, a ball hits you in the hands, you got to catch that. Like, Dante Pettis is playing himself right out of the NFL. I mean, if we're being honest here, this dude is soft. He has alligator arms over the middle. He looks like a complete wasted second-round pick. And I want to like the guy, but he was a great returner in Washington. He's done no kick returning or punt returning whatsoever for this team right now. And as far as an offensive threat on the outside, whatever we saw last year in blowout games, we're not seeing it this year in tight games. And when Emmanuel Sanders went down, guys, like they lost any reliability for Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jimmy, I can't tell you how many times I watched Jimmy's face mask look at Goodwin, look over at Pettis, and was like, nah, I'm not going to throw to you. And I don't blame him. Like, these dudes are dropping crucial balls. Even Deebo Samuel, who had a monster game last night for a rookie, he drops a huge pass right over the middle. And I expect rookies to make those mistakes. But that's kind of to my bigger point, where we made the move for Emmanuel Sanders. It's not enough. You need another legitimate veteran wide receiver who can make contested catches.
Well, you're not getting any more this year.
It might be enough if he was healthy, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about today for sure. It's a Niner Tuesday. Michael Lombardi joins us at 3, former Niner Alex Boone at 4, and Peter King, the king of NFL coverage, at 4:30. I'm Matt Kolsky, alongside Ray Ratto, and in for Damon Bruce today, Joe the Butcher Boy Shasky, and we're sponsored by Nutrisystem for Men. Lose weight eating food you love. Now save $50, plus get a week of protein pack shakes free at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Joe Shasky in for Damon Bruce today, alongside me, Matt Kolsky, and Ray Ratto. We're talking about the Niners' overtime loss last night, 27-24 final against the Seahawks. A lot of opportunities for the Niners to win that game, but alas, it was not to be. Today at 3 o'clock, we'll be joined by Radio.com Sports NFL insider Michael Lombardi to recap last night's game. Plus, look ahead to the final 7 weeks of the season. Michael is brought to you by Quip. Go to quip.com/2019. Get your first refill pack for free. Unfortunate.
95.7 The Game breaking news. Yeah. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by the midsize mattress for Mercedes-Benz.
I wish I had better breaking news than this. Here is the Kyle Shanahan injury update, and I'll just tell you off the top that Albie has handed me a page of gibberish, so I'm going to do my best to make sense of it. First things first, worst news, tear off the Band-Aid, Ronald Blair will be out for the remainder of the season with a torn ACL. And look, Ronald Blair is not Nick Bosa or DeForest Buckner, but he's part of the depth of this line that made it so formidable.
He made a great play last night on Russell Wilson.
He's made great plays all year long. And it's a tough thing for a guy who seemed to really be coming into his own this year. So that stinks. Matt Breida aggravated his ankle. Are you saying he's day-to-day, Albie? Is that what this is supposed to say? Okay. DJ Jones with a groin injury.
I missed him big time last night when he got out.
He's another guy who is part of the depth at defensive tackle and has made some tremendous plays this year.
How about that closeout play near the sidelines on Russ? That was an unbelievable play. The dude's like 330 pounds and chased down Russ.
He had a great chase down play in the open field a week or two ago as well. Mm-hmm. He's been awesome. And again, a late round Lynch draft pick that was coming to fruition this year. He's got an MRI pending on that groin, but he's going to miss at least a week.
That's not good.
Joe Staley, good news is the leg's fine. Bad news, broken / dislocated finger? Is that? And and he'll be getting a second opinion, but could end up having surgery, so it looks like we'll be back to school and or Brunskill.
Ray, did you think he broke his finger waving Jadeveon Clowney through the line?
Okay. Yes. Or, that was it.
Yeah.
He actually snapped it off himself as a statement that he hates you.
Good job, everybody.
Sweet. I'll be honest with you guys. Look, I love Joe Staley. Staley's been I'd say he's the third greatest offensive lineman in 49er history. Like Bob St. Clair and Guy McIntyre. Then I got Joe Staley. He's right there. But watching him walk off the field in that third, fourth, and overtime, he did not look like the Joe Staley that I'm accustomed to rooting for. I love Joe Staley, but his best attribute is his agility. And if he can't move on that leg, that's not good.
This piece of paper I'm holding says the leg is okay, but the leg did not look great, truth be told, last night. And the last piece of news is actually, I think, probably the best you could have hoped for, which is Emmanuel Sanders' ribs injury. He will be day-to-day and likely a game-time decision for Sunday against the Cardinals. And we also have news on Kittle and Gold, who both obviously missed last night's game. Shanahan says he's hopeful for both guys. And the reason they had Kittle watch the game from upstairs was they just didn't want him standing on that knee for 3.5 hours, which seems smart.
I wanted him to just run onto the field and throw on a helmet and play. They needed him so bad. They needed his emotion. They needed his headbutting the teammates in the huddle. They needed him setting the edge in the run game. Like, they missed the physicality. Guys, they got punched in the mouth. That was a playoff-level game last night, and they did not have their best player, George Kittle. He is their best player.
One more piece of information. Kyle Shanahan also saying Akello Witherspoon will get the job back when he's fully healthy, but before they're ready to declare him fully healthy, he's got to have 3 straight strong days of practice, and then he'll be active and get his starting corner job back.
Don't you think they missed his big body against those receivers last night?
A little bit. I mean, Albie and I talked about this morning, and Emmanuel Mosley has played great.
I agree.
He has, but he's just not the size of Akello Witherspoon. And there were a few plays, even on plays he did make, where I thought, boy, man, if DK Metcalf just put his hands on that, that's a catch, because there's just nothing Emmanuel Mosley can do at a certain point. And Akello Witherspoon, there are things he can do to a receiver that big, which I think helps. But Mosley is not a problem right now.
No, I don't think he is. Ray, I want to ask you a question about the Shanahan-Pete Carroll matchup, because you were back around in the day, and I always looked at, Bill Walsh was a genius. There's no question. Everybody loves him. But there were times that he would go up against Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, and he would get stymied. I felt like last night, Shanahan, I don't know whether he prepared for Kittle to be ready and didn't have any wrinkles, but it didn't feel like the normal Kyle Shanahan, like, boom, 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 excitement. I didn't see any big chunk plays. I saw no trickery. And then on Seattle's side, they put number 74 out there. They had 6 offensive linemen out there. They made a point. They were not going to let Bosa or D Ford or Armstead get off. They were going to have 6 linemen the entire time out there. 74 was the eligible receiver time and time again. Did you think Pete Carroll got the best of Shanahan yesterday from a schematic standpoint?
No. I think who outcoached who is one of the great myths of sports. Unless one guy's a bad coach, because mostly the talent will dictate what you can and cannot do. And without Kittle and without Sanders, eventually Shanahan is stymied offensively and defensively. There is a point at which 6 guys can block 4, no matter how good the 4 are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really what do you do when you have linebackers and secondary people that clearly outnumber what Seattle wants to do? That to me was where the difference was. I mean, at some point, and teams have tried to do this before and failed, but Seattle's offensive line is pretty good. And if you put enough people there, anybody's going to have a hard time. I mean, because look, you need to have, if Russell Wilson goes down, they're the Giants.
Yeah.
So they're going to protect Russell Wilson at all costs.
He's on there.
And I don't believe that Kyle Shanahan didn't see that coming. I think this was about performance, not scheme.
Matt, you had brought up that you'd take Shanahan over Pete Carroll.
I think I would.
Yeah, I'm taking Pete Carroll. It pains me to say it. This guy's won in so many ways. Don't you look at their team and just the way they've won?
What's the way he's winning right now?
it's with scrappy defense that's really physical. They got three linebackers that they're daring you to throw the ball to beat them. And then, like, they've reinvented themselves. In many ways, they remind me of New England in a different way, that quarterback, head coach are the constant, and yet all of the pieces around them continue to change. They take your junk, and they shine it up, and they make it work. Josh Gordon last night, two giant slants. Week one with that team. Like, week one, this guy's performing. It just, it's...
To me... The way they're winning now is Russell Wilson. You know, I'm not sure I see the defensive edge that you're seeing with Pete Carroll. Just because, how many drops was it? 9 drops yesterday for the 49ers?
You don't think physicality was part of those drops? Because I do. I think that a lot of our wide receivers are soft and they start to hear footsteps and see ghosts.
Does that sound like a description of a good wide receiver to you?
No.
So yeah, I suppose you could credit the Seattle defense for intimidating the Niner wide receivers, but I would argue if you have wide receivers who are intimidated quite so easily, it's the wide receivers that are the problem, not some extraordinary play by the defense. And I think, look, the results throughout the year back that up in terms of the Seattle defense. It has not been particular. This was one of its better performances, certainly. And I think a lot of that was driven by Jadeveon Clowney, who was just
brilliant.
Look, sometimes I think a great player, or maybe in this case in particular, a otherworldly athlete, just has a game that no one can deal with. And that's why, I mean, broken and dislocated finger to the side for now, Joe Staley coming in 30-whatever years old, first game in, what, 6 weeks since the injury? I wouldn't panic about Jadeveon Clowney beating him a few times. Not yet. I need to see that. If Joe Staley starts getting beat by guys who are not Jadeveon Clowney playing the best game of his career, then I'm more interested in that conversation.
Well, they got Arizona this week, and Chandler Jones owns him. Like, historically, Chandler Jones has really been a tough guard for Joe Staley. So I think we're going to learn a lot about where Joe Staley's at in his recovery. And I guess this is my bigger takeaway. And again, I love Staley. I'm just saying, everyone assume that at his age, he's just going to come back from this broken leg, and he's just going to pick up where he left off. Sometimes one of those injuries at the end of your career changes fundamentally who you are. I'm not sure that's where he's at. I need a bigger body of work. I'm just worried that this might be the beginning of the end of Joe Staley, and now we're looking for another left tackle.
Go ahead.
No, you. All right.
No.
Boy, it's play nice.
Logically, it might be the beginning of the end. I mean, he's got a lot of miles on him.
That's what I'm saying,
but
right?
I don't know that one game is how you define that.
I agree.
I mean, let's see what he does against Arizona. Let's see what he does down the road. I mean, I'm not of the opinion that his injury was so severe that all of a sudden he's just going to be overwhelmed and can't play anymore. I mean, he's had games like this before. Not many, but I would simply caution you not to overreact to the way he played last night as an indicator that his career is done. I think that's insane.
No, and I don't think Joe's saying his career is done, but it is
He says the beginning of the end.
Well, it is. I think the point Joe's making, if I can take it from him, is that Joe Staley is at an age where when it starts to look like he's lost a step, you worry that he may actually have lost a step, whereas this same game 5 years ago is much less concerning in the long term. If this game happens 5 years ago, it's, man, Joe Staley had a bad game. That's weird. And we move on. At 35, coming off a broken leg, it's, man, Joe Staley just had a bad game. I hope it doesn't get worse from here.
And if he was like John Ogden, where he's 6'6", 350, I'd say, wow, it's okay. He can be a little less mobile because he's just going to maul people. Like, that's not who Joe Staley is. He's made a close to Hall of Fame career, or at least a 49er Ring of Honor career, by using his agility and his speed.
We had Mike McGlinchey on the show tell us Joe Staley was the offensive lineman who would win a foot race.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Speaking of offensive linemen, Weston Richburg should be good to go. Do we even know? It was something with a hand?
Yeah, it looked like he was coming out of the game. I had the binoculars. I'm sitting in the end zone, you know, with Grandpa. You got to have the binoculars. And I'm looking over, and I said, 58, looks like he just threw his helmet, and he looks like everybody's around him. It looked like something happened with the wrist or the hand.
He was holding his hand when he walked off the field, yeah. I know, but he did come back in the game.
Thank God.
And Kyle Shanahan says he'll be good to go for Sunday. Emmanuel Sanders, the injury involves rib cartilage, which makes more sense because a broken rib, he didn't take a big hit on that play. He just, like, turned and then pulled up.
Yeah.
So I think you can sort of pull the cartilage in your chest if you turn wrong. I don't know. That's what that sounds like to me. And then this is interesting. I would love to get this sound, Albie, but this is a quote from Kyle Shanahan on Dante Pettis. He's had his opportunities. The more he doesn't take advantage of his opportunities, the less opportunities he gets. He did get a couple last night because of injury. And I didn't think he made them.
Yeah.
That's about as damning as you're going to get from a head coach, I would say. And I'd love to hear it so we could sort of hear the tone. But Dante Pettis did play 33 offensive snaps last night, which is 33 more offensive snaps than Richie James played.
His play disgusted me last night. It was more just like the way he was playing. Going over the middle, falling down, and then like he's got like an injury as he's getting up off the ground. It spoke to me. It smacked of, I'm soft. I don't want in this game. There are certain games that the 49ers have basically beaten the crap out of the other team, and you watch them tap out in real time. I watched multiple 49er wide receivers, and I feel like Matt Breida, to an extent as well, tap out of that game because of the physicality. That's playoff-level physicality. And I know Bourne dropped a ton of balls. At least he's physical somewhat over the middle. He tries. He just can't catch everything. The ball goes right off his hands. Pettis and Goodwin, like, they just don't have it in them. And I don't know where they're going to find this. Is it Richie James? Do you go out and get Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown? Ray, what do you do with this wide receiver situation?
You don't get Antonio Brown.
Why not?
Because he's a disaster waiting to happen.
He's a great football player.
It doesn't matter. I mean, if you flush out of the New England Patriots in 10 days, after flushing out of a $30 million contract in a place you didn't really want to go to begin with, and the week before you have a hearing with the NFL, you decide to MF the NFL, to me, there's a level of impulse control that he simply no longer has. And he's not trustworthy.
What about Josh Gordon? Is he trustworthy?
Well, but New England, see, here's the difference, though, and because I was going to actually bring that up.
And he caught two big passes on Sherman last night.
But the precise difference with Josh Gordon is a guy who New England moved on from because they couldn't keep him healthy versus a sort of, I don't know if mysterious is the right word because we all know all the stuff that was going on, but like very clearly the Antonio Brown release was about the fact that he couldn't function as a human being on the level that the Patriots need a guy to function. Gordon, they actually brought back over the offseason after last year. And I think they couldn't get him on the field, and Bill Belichick became frustrated with it. It's a very different locker room situation.
Well, so let's play this down the road. I mean, honestly, Ray, Matt, let me ask you guys. You bring the guy in for a week, it's a complete disaster. You move off him. You bring the guy in for a week, and he plays nice, and you just kind of go week to week. Why is this some, you know, damnation if he comes in and it doesn't perform? Like right now,
because he's already shown that he. I mean, there is no better situation anywhere in football than to perform for the New England Patriots. No better situation. They will take guys who other people won't, and they will play them until they're fed up with them. It took 2 weeks. So what are you gaining here? One game in which he might catch six balls, and the next week he's just going to complain and pout? But he's lost.
This is also, I think, everybody, a moot point, because Adam Schefter's tweet yesterday was something to the effect, I'm trying to find the exact tweet, but something to the effect of he's not going to play this year, and if he was signed, he would likely go on the commissioner's exempt list due to all of the, shall we say, stuff around him.
I'm suspicious of Dez Bryant, not for the same reason, but if he's as talented as he is, someone would have made a run at him by now.
And then, of course, Drew Rosenhaus said, quote, I'm confident Antonio will play again this season. I believe the NFL should clear him after they interview him this week, and I expect he'll be signed shortly after that. So who knows?
In a vacuum, let's be honest. I'm not even a huge Dez Bryant fan. I'm always like, nah, we don't need him. That was when I thought Trent Taylor was coming back, when I thought Jalen Hurd was coming back.
I don't know that we know they're not.
Well, Trent is almost for sure out for the year. The report over the weekend was basically that he's not going to be returning. It feels like his NFL career is the sand is coming out of the hourglass, if you will. Yeah. Look, the Niners are desperate right now. People could say they aren't. This window is right now. And the difference between having games at Levi's or going on the road to Green Bay, going on the road to Seattle, going on the road to New Orleans, it's one game. It's not two, three games. It's going to be one game.
I would clarify one thing. The Niners are not a desperate football team right now.
At wide receiver, they are.
The Niners are in desperate need of a wide receiver. There's a difference, though. Because if they don't get a wide receiver, they're still a playoff team that's way ahead of where you expected them to be this year and that has a lot going for them in a positive direction. If they get a wide receiver, frankly, if Emmanuel Sanders and George Kittle are both healthy, then I think they're a Super Bowl contender. So if your point is, I can't count on Emmanuel Sanders and George Kittle to be healthy, so I'd like to do everything possible to bolster the wide receiving core, I get that. I still don't think Antonio Brown is the answer.
That's fair. I ask out loud, are we ever to believe that Dante Pettis will be a reliable target for Jimmy Garoppolo?
I don't know how you could.
And Jimmy Garoppolo has no faith in him whatsoever. You see when he drops back, his face mask looks at 18, and then he goes, I just can't throw you the ball. And the offense is non-functional if you have two wide receivers of your three that are out there that are not even going to be looked at from your quarterback.
Well, some problems can't be fixed.
Certainly not at this stage
of the season. I mean, they have to hope that Emmanuel Sanders can heal quickly and not be hampered unduly by his injury.
Yeah.
Dante Pettis, I mean, look, the way they used him in training camp told you everything you needed to know, and everybody kept a buddy.
You're right.
We saw those five games when he was magic. No, when a coach, an offensive coach, won't use a guy because he can't trust him and his quarterback can't trust him, that's it. That's all you need to know. Everything else is just chin music.
And to that point, Marquise Goodwin only took 12 offensive snaps last night.
And the most creative one was the one Ray was talking about before the show started. It was when he was at special teams.
Yep.
If that didn't tell you all you need to know about Marquise Goodwin, and Jimmy's reaction, by the way, when Marquise dropped that ball on the first drive, which would have got them right at like the 7, 8, 9, 10-yard line, like that was an inexcusable drop. You're wide open. I don't know why he's contorting his body, waiting for contact. Come back to the ball. High point that sucker. Like, Debo did it a couple of times in this game where he came back to the ball. We know Emmanuel Sanders does it. None of the other receivers do it right now.
Let's hear that Kyle Shanahan audio on Dante Pettis.
Had a number of opportunities. I'm one of the guys who's believing in the most. That's why he's here. And he's had his opportunities. The more he doesn't take advantage of his opportunities, the less opportunities he gets. But he did get a couple last night because of injury. And I didn't think he made them. So we'll see how this week goes. But Dante has the ability. But we're waiting for him to pick it up and have the consistency and take advantage of some of these opportunities he's gotten.
I mean, that, to me, sounds like a coach asking himself the question, what else can I possibly do to get this guy going?
No, it sounds worse than that.
I agree.
It sounds to me like, I don't think I can fix this.
Exactly.
Right. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I've tried all the normal stuff. I've coached everything I know how to coach. Maybe if I call him a chump in the media, that'll awaken something, because that seems to be the frustration with Shanahan, is he does have, Pettis has ability. We even saw it on an NFL football field last year.
What is the ability?
You mean what is his elite skill as a wide receiver?
Yeah, I don't think he has any elite skills. I think he has some okay skills.
Fair enough. What I'm saying is we saw a four-game stretch where he performed at a very high level last year, despite mediocre quarterback play.
That's
he put up the numbers. So all I'm saying is there is physical talent. He is fast. He's incredibly quick. I don't know if he's a good wide receiver. He certainly doesn't look like it right now. But my point is the frustration for Shanahan, I think, is I can see the reasons you ought to be much better than you are, which leaves me clueless on how to make you better.
Yeah, he's just, the one thing he lacks is toughness. And you either have it or you don't. Like, you don't see guys get more tough as years go on. Like, you either are a tough individual and you're going to make catches over the middle knowing you're going to get whapped, or you're not. And I just don't see the toughness from him, right? Can this guy get, like, what is the next level for him? Like, going from being a fifth and sixth wide receiver to being maybe a three? Like, he's not a one or a two in any world.
Don't answer that question just yet. We're going to answer that question when we come back from this break. And I also want to hear from the people. 888-957-9570. Is there a wide receiver answer? What has to happen? Now, hopefully, the answer is Kittle and Sanders are healthy, and this is not as big of a problem as it looked last night. But if this is an injury issue you're going to be dealing with all year long, if you can't count on George Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders to be at 100% week to week, what's the next move? Is there a next move, or is Ray right? There are some problems that can't be solved, and you're just stuck with it. We'll also ask that and a number of other questions of
clock
Michael
management.
Lombardi. We can get into some clock management coming up at 3 o'clock. I don't have any problems with the clock management, but
I do.
We'll get to that. Really?
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. 888-957-9570. Is there an answer to the wide receiver problem or not? I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Ray Ratto. Joe Shasky in for Damon Bruce today. Michael Lombardi coming up at 3 o'clock. Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Come on. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Garoppolo, pressure coming after him as he releases, and it's intercepted by Diggs. Quandre Diggs on the return, and the newly acquired veteran safety comes up big for Seattle.
That was not a good moment for the San Francisco 49ers, but also that call doesn't really paint the picture of what happened on that play. And of course, Joe Tessitore is doing television, so you could have seen what happened. But what that call should have said is not Garoppolo drops back and it's intercepted, but Garoppolo drops back, hits Kendrick Bourne right in between the thumbs, and then it's intercepted because Kendrick Bourne passed it on to the defensive back standing several yards behind him. That is the problem. In fact, I would argue that the biggest issue of last night, the reason above all that the Niners lost that game, is poor wide receiver play. And I think it you could see it right in Jimmy Garoppolo's stats. He was 10 of 15 for about 130, I believe, when Emmanuel Sanders got hurt. And he, after that point, went 14 of 31 for less than 100, for about 118 yards. So 15 throws for 130, and then you end up with 31 throws for about 120. That's the expression, not just of the importance of Emmanuel Sanders, but of how weak the wide receiver core is beneath him. And all due respect to Deebo Samuel, who did have a really nice game, even he had a critical drop.
Huge one.
And frankly, has had a critical drop in pretty much every game where he's had five or more targets.
Agreed.
It's been part, and I love Deebo. I hope he succeeds. I think he has a chance to be great, but that's just a fact. He's been putting the ball on the ground like all these receivers, and that's why we ask the people, what would you do? Is there an answer? Ray says some problems can't be solved. Is there a solve to the 49er wide receiver problem? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. We got Michael Lombardi, Radio.com NFL Insider, coming up in about 10 minutes. But right now, let's hear from you. Sam in Sacramento, what do you got?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. Well, I've got an answer. I don't think there is a great answer. But first of all, got to take a hard pass on the Antonio Brown offer.
Okay.
Mine is a twofold. First thing I do is I relegate Dante Pettis to Jerry, I'm sorry, I had just lost his name, Junior, our punt returner,
Richie
and I
James.
Give him
yeah.
The reps. The second one is I have my scouts go scour the Canadian Football League because there is a pretty good history, and no, you're not going to find a number one receiver, but I think there's a pretty good history of guys coming from that league and just being productive, maybe a possession-type guy, good route runner, good hands, And if he's got a little bit of size, then I think that's about the best the front office can do at this point.
That's an interesting idea. Scour the Canadian Football League. Ray, you watch some Canadian football. Any wide receivers we should be aware of?
Who's the next Anthony Carter?
They don't have one now. also, they're deep into their playoffs, so there isn't a lot of scouring to be done.
They tried that a few years back.
Carlos Charles. I forget the guy's name.
No, I think Carlos and Charles are different wide receivers, RIP.
The big problem with getting guys from the Canadian League is that their best guys are almost always possession types.
Yes.
They're not field stretchers. And they are guys who are basically good mutters.
But they need those.
Wouldn't a good mutter help here?
Well, I don't know. How far into the future do you want to project the weather?
It sort of
depends on what you're after. I mean, do they want a route runner? Do they want a field stretcher? What do they want?
Competent wide receiver play, where guys just catch the ball that goes between the numbers.
Which leads me to my next point, which is everybody scouts everybody. There are no surprises in the Canadian Football League anymore. It's not like you suddenly trip over Warren Moon.
I think that's probably true. Let's go to Ray, not you, in Oakland. Ray, what's
Let's
up?
Let's never go to me.
Hey, what's up, you guys? How you doing?
Good.
We're all great. Go ahead, Ray.
Okay, yeah. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I feel Deebo Samuels, you know, he possesses a lot of physicality. He showed last night. I mean, he did drop a crucial pass that was thrown to him in a crucial moment. I think I take it back to, like I said, Terrell Owens in that Green Bay Packers game in 98. He dropped a bunch of balls, and then when he counted, he came through. So I feel like we should just keep working with Deebo Samuel. But, yeah, we do eventually. We will need to, pick up another guy that possibly can deliver in a crucial moment.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. What was the line you gave me earlier, Joe?
T.O., he dropped a lot of passes, and one time, famously, he was on the sideline. Shout out my boy White Mike in South City. He turns to the camera, Terrell Owens does, and he goes, "They say I drop a lot of passes. I know one thing I caught, a flight to Honolulu."
That's the problem. Deebo has not caught any flights to Honolulu, nor is he on his way at this moment to catching a flight to Honolulu. So again, I'm a Deebo Samuel fan. I hope he does well all the time. You can't ignore the fact that every game that he's been involved in this year, more than a little bit, he has made a bad drop. That drop last night, that was not like he reached for it and his fingertips were on it and he didn't quite get it. That was
between the numbers.
Between the numbers, on his hands, he popped it up in the air. He didn't let it. He didn't put his hands on it. He let it hit his shoulder pads, popped it right up in the air, and it could have been a pick.
Yeah, but it's not just Deebo. Deebo is like least of my worries. It's
agreed.
Bourne and Goodwin and Pettis. Those, like Bourne, here's the thing with Bourne. He gets open. He gets his hands on it. He doesn't let him hit him in the pads, and it goes right through his hands. The guy drives me nuts. I want to ask you guys this question because I mean this sincerely. From a team-building aspect, I know they drafted Jalen Hurd because he's bigger. He's a bigger body type than what they have at their other wide receiver spots. But my goodness, the entire defensive line outside of D Ford was drafted because they want to be big and strong and maul everyone. McGlinchey was drafted because he's big and strong. He's got great feet, obviously. Kittle, big and strong. The only spot really on this team outside of maybe a guard and the left tackle Staley that is egregiously small, it's wide receiver. Can you get me a couple of big dudes at wide receiver that fit the mold?
And if there's a criticism of the Deebo Samuel pick with DK Metcalf on the board, I think that's it. It's a style criticism because I'm not ready to tell you Deebo can't have a better career than DK Metcalf.
I'm with you there.
They both played pretty well last night. They both made mistakes last night, right? I mean, they're rookies. But DK Metcalf looks like nothing on the 49ers team from a physical standpoint, and I do think that would be a nice thing to have for them right now. Let's go to Mitch in Manteca. What do you got on Niner receivers, Mitch?
Yeah.
Oh, Mitch. Your phone.
I've known you since a little kid, and I think you are the best pod and newscaster there ever was. So
I think he's talking about Joe. You're probably talking about Joe, right?
Yeah. I just think the Niners, they got to stick with what they have because if they wanted another receiver, they would have got another one in free agency. But I just don't think there's nobody out there. I think they want to stick with the nucleus in the locker room. And, let's see if they could do two tight end two tight end sets maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's certainly, if Kittle's healthy, a viable option. And I think Garrett Celek coming back maybe opens to, although Dwelly's been perfectly good in the two tight end sets and actually pretty decent filling in for Kittle. I don't think that answers the question. I do think the caller's on to something as it pertains to what they like about the room. We heard a lot about how they liked guys in various rooms over the last 2 years, and nobody cared because they didn't look any good on the field. Now that they do look good on the field, and I think that's part of the AB conversation, I think they do feel like this is a locker room situation they don't want to mess with too much.
That's fine, but these windows are short. Like, this isn't a five-year window. This is not the Golden State Warriors. It's the NFL. I mean, you saw it in just this game. Guys are walking off every other play with a devastating injury. Like, right. To believe that this team is going to be exactly the way they are next year, that's not how the football is played. The game is about attrition, and they've lost tons and tons of depth. And we're at the point now where I got a bunch of wide receivers that no one else in the league is going to honor. And so you're going to see more and more teams stack the box and dare Jimmy Garoppolo to make the right decisions, make accurate throws, and then dare these wide receivers to either make contested catches, or to beat a guy one-on-one, which nobody yesterday outside of Debo could do consistently the second Sanders went off the field.
Here's the problem that with the tight end theory. If you put another tight end in, you just congest the box more. That's the biggest drawback to that.
Yes.
And Kyle Shanahan has tried to figure out ways to open up lanes, not only for running backs, but for everybody all year long, and hasn't been able to because there's nobody on the flanks that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I don't see how any of the guys that are on the roster now and healthy are anything more than what they've shown you. I mean, it's not like it's going to get easier.
Well, with Debo,
stretch.
I mean,
not at all.
When you talk about a rookie wide receiver putting the ball on the ground in easy catch situations, I think that can improve because that can just be a rookie lack of focus. That's the sort of thing.
I'm talking about in the immediate term. Yeah, I'm not talking about him long term. I don't know him long term.
No, but you're right. It's hard to imagine a magical answer to the wide receiver problems on the roster short of Emmanuel Sanders being completely healthy. Let's quickly, before we get to Mike Lombardi, go to Mike in San Jose. What is up, Mike?
So, first of all, fellas, you guys are doing a great job today. A little bit sad about what I've seen, but I also seen some things that are actually not the worst in the world. Obviously, we knew that we were thin at the wide receiver position, so the fact that everybody thought that we were going to beat Seattle with less wide receivers than we already had was kind of blasphemous. Obviously, Emmanuel Sanders getting hurt during the game is a big blow, but Kittle was our third down guy. Now, going against Seattle and them knowing a little bit about us and us knowing the amount we knew about them, we definitely walked into this biting off a little bit more than we could chew. The first quarter was excellent. The rest of the game, though, I mean, they pretty much dominated. We had no answer. Staley was getting used left and right.
Yeah, that speaks to that's with Emmanuel Sanders and without Emmanuel Sanders. And, look, Jimmy was pretty good with Emmanuel Sanders. We got to head into our 3 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.